episode 52. 52 consecutive weeks.
That's a long time. That's a year. That's a year, man. We've been prepping for it, or not prepping, because we're not doing anything crazy. We're not that full of ourselves yet. we'll do specials for the hundreds or 200s. But yeah, that kind of went super quick how we got here, even though this year has been extremely crazy with how long this year has felt. We've definitely have had a fun time here. It's here already, and before we know it, it'll be year two.
Sorry, Paige just dropped a whole bunch of subs in the Twitch as soon as we went live, like a jerk. I love him, but he did it right at the beginning of the show. But
you threw Dave off. Dave's already thrown off.
So my name is Dave Hunt, and I'm joined by Michael Swick, and we are Digital Days Gaming. We are a weekly podcast that releases every week, same day, same time, Thursday, 6 a.m. Eastern time.
With some bonus stuff sprinkled in there on top.
We are at over 60 pieces of unique content. I think it's like 65 or something. I don't even know the number, but it's close.
If you include Patreon, it's
above 60 for sure. So, it's been a cool year as we're getting really, really close. The next time we record will be, after, November 1st, and November 1st is the birthday of Digital Days Gaming. So that'll be cool. We'll have like Michael said, we'll have like a minor thing on that day, nothing crazy. But we'll definitely look forward to that for that announcement. So you can follow us on all the social medias, Twitter, Facebook, all that stuff is in the show notes. Discord, we have all of it. You can subscribe to us on Twitch, follow us on YouTube, any of those things. Review us. If you can review our show, that would be super helpful as we're getting over the year mark. You know, like people that are looking for new shows, they start to see consistency. They start to see over 50 episodes, and then they start reading reviews and like, hey, maybe I should give this a shot, or maybe they should give it a chance again. So any of the things that you can do for that is always super helpful. So sharing the show, reviewing the show is the best way you can help us grow. And then if you want to support us, you can just do so at patreon.com/digitaldaysgaming, or you can just donate to us directly through PayPal. Both of those links are in the show notes, so if that's what you choose to do. And like always, most of the time we broadcast the show at twitch.tv/digitaldaysgaming on Monday nights, and you can watch us live, hang out in the chat, and mess me up like Baddest Page does when he, you know, gifts all of his subs and throws me off, because I also have alerts going on the Twitch channels, and those alerts go in my headphones.
you fucked up, I guess.
Well, no, I want to know when it happens. As a streamer, when I'm playing a game, I want to know when somebody does something cool in the chat, and I don't have a whole bunch of unique setups for individual things. I have scenes set up, and you know, there's other things I can do, but from an audio standpoint, I do like to know when somebody follows or subscribes, and you know, so those things are all things that help us interact with the community better through Facebook, through Discord, through Twitch, all that stuff. Both of us have done a pretty terrible job over the last 14 days of streaming, but I think that we're both kind of in a little bit of a lull right now. We'll kind of talk about that a little bit of like, there's a whole bunch of stuff coming out. Like, it's Watch Dogs is like the beginning of going down the hill of hitting game after game after game after game. So along with, as you're going down that hill, you're going to run into two consoles as well. So
yeah, we still need to figure out how we're going to tackle that. I took the day off work, but I'm going to have to hope Amazon delivers that day.
Yeah, I just changed stores, so I don't know what I'm going to be able to do quite yet. So
yeah.
But all right, we're going to jump into the news. It's a little bit of a lighter news week, and like I just mentioned, it'll be a little bit of a lighter what we're planning on watching, just because Michael and I are busy as we're getting ready to ramp up into the holiday season in a COVID world that seems to be getting worse every day.
Yeah. I'm working crazy hours right now because another coworker went down, so yeah. It's definitely been pretty intense. Luckily, the news has been pretty light as we still prep for the new consoles coming out, and looks like Ubisoft is prepping for new consoles as well.
This is cool.
So Ubisoft is basically getting rid of Uplay and Uplay Club, and they are making one service called Ubisoft Connect. This will still have the same things you saw in the Uplay Club or the Ubisoft Club, where you can get special achievements to unlock gear in specific games. But the big thing with this will allow for cross progression and cross platform support. So you'll be making an Ubisoft account still, or I'm guessing you're going to push it way harder.
Probably already have.
Yeah, which I believe you can opt out of, but like now I wonder if this is going to be like, no, you need to opt in to play multiplayer. So cross progression means it's cross save. So your save can go from whatever platform you want because the save is being handled on Ubisoft server side, and then cross platform play, which Ubisoft has already started to do, like VR games were like their first like cross platform multiplayer experiments, and they're just moving that just general with all their games going forward. So this is huge. Obviously, the cross-progression thing does require you to buy multiple copies of their games to fully take use of it. But if you're that crazy, this is a way to do it. Or if you take advantage of Game Pass, the Ubisoft PC streaming service, which I don't think is going away, that's a way you'll probably end up with multiple copies, or if a game releases PS Plus.
Yeah, they have a subscription service on PC similar to like Origin Access and Game Pass of where you can sign. I don't remember the exact name of it. Like I wanted to say it was called Uplay, but I don't think it is. But
I think Uplay Plus probably.
Yeah, that might be right. And that would give you, you know, day and date like full collector's editions of the games. It's like $15 or $20 a month, and you know, you could play Watch Dogs, you could play Assassin's Creed, you could play the whole, it's you pay the subscription, you get access to their entire library on PC. So that's the interesting part that like jumps into my head right away of like a game like The Division 2 for me, that I actually own it on PC and I own it on PS4. And to be able to jump back and forth like that, it's a really cool feature that I can do with Destiny right now. I can play Destiny on four different platforms, and I can just jump back and forth as I need to. I can play on Xbox, I can play on PC, I can play on Stadia, I can play on PS4. So, and my character's there and all my stuff is there, and it's great in terms of how that works. And this is really cool. I think they're being very, very careful with their wording, because they just kind of talk about like games coming out going forward. So like it doesn't look like Division 2 is going to get cross save functionality, at least right now. And, you know, I think some of that might have to do with the prior gen, because we're consistently hearing about, like, even I saw today, like, PUBG announces how it's going to work on next gen and it's going to have cross play. And, so there's definitely something in the hardware now that's being more integrated. I think that some of the stuff was able to be figured out, like Fortnite figured it out, Activision figured it out, or made Sony let them do it. And now I think it's just being baked into the hardware now. But this also means that you have to, like you said, it's probably beneficial not to opt out of making a Ubisoft account, not to opt out of making an Activision account, because you are getting a benefit from it eventually. Like something like this that maybe down the road shows up on Game Pass. If you have a Game Pass subscription, you already bought it on PS4, and then you got a buddy that plays, you know, on Xbox, like you can play with them now. You can bring your character over, whether it's Division 3 or Assassin's Creed Valhalla, get some kind of co-op support or anything like that. It's really cool. It's really intriguing, and it makes it, you know, interesting for me. And I know, like you've always said, they get the data that they want too.
Yeah. They get you locked in their ecosystem. They get the data that they can then use and fine tune future games. Mm-hmm. And then also data they can price out advertisers. But you know, just how it is now, you know. So this is just another publisher getting in on this. I mean, we see EA dabbling a little bit in cross-platform stuff. The cross-save stuff
Apex,
is...
Apex, yeah.
Yeah. I don't know why more companies don't just do the cross-save thing, because that just incentivizes people.
Copies of the game.
Yes. Like, it incentivizes players to buy more copies. So I don't know why more companies don't just take this approach, but I think we'll start to see that just become a thing, just because it's an easy way to get people to give their information away or an email.
But I also think it's a way to just benefit game sales in general. Not even cross save, like the getting to the point with like cross platform play. Like if you own an Xbox and I own a PlayStation and we are friends, which we are, and you know that's all you own and that's all I own, and we want to play a game together. 5 years ago, we'd be like, oh, sorry. Like now, it's gonna be like, okay, well, let's look and see what we can play, which means that You know, we might go buy the Call of Duty game because we can do it now. Yeah. You might go buy, you know, buy the season pass for Apex because you can do it. Like, these are all, like, things that will still help boost sales versus you saying, oh, I own Call of Duty on Xbox. Like, oh, I have a PlayStation. I'm not going to buy it.
Yeah, I'm also just thinking of just random sales that do happen. Remember when Division was $3?
Yeah, exactly.
Or Division 2 was like $3? Yeah. That would incentivize someone like me with multiple platforms to be like, ah, fuck it, maybe I'll just buy them on all the platforms just because my cross, you know, all that stuff's going to just like work.
Or we had when it was going on, we had a, you know, like there was a lot of people in the community that were playing it. There was a, you know, two or three people that were playing it on Xbox and like 10 or 15 that were playing it on PlayStation. But now it meant that I might have been more inclined to go and spend that $3 on Xbox to play with those two or three people because I could just bring my character.
Yeah. But now, you know, we'll have cross-platform play on all their games going in the future. So you won't need to buy multiple copies to play with your friends. But if you're inclined to for some reason, you definitely can. Right. So good move by Ubisoft. One of the only good moves they've done this year. I have a feeling we're going to see every major publisher make an announcement similar to this over the next year. You know, just incentivizing people to sign up for their platforms just so they can do cross save and cross play. So I'm happy with this. I'm hoping we see more and more of this pop up around the industry. Let's go to something I don't want to see continue to move around the industry.
I don't know another how I missed this week. So.
It was announced today, I think.
Okay.
Facebook, they're launching their own cloud gaming service. It doesn't really have a name. It's just going to be an addition to Facebook Gaming. Jason Rubin is going to take over this, which... he is co-founder of Naughty Dog. He left Naughty Dog to run THQ for its last year before THQ went bankrupt. And then he went from THQ to Oculus, which is owned by Facebook. So now he's just being moved over within the same company from Oculus to this new streaming service. The hook with Facebook's streaming service, which they kind of took shots at, you know, some of the other streaming services like Stadia, they're not going to overpromise shit. They're going to launch with 5 free-to-play games. And they're only going to do free-to-play games. And this is just going to be an extension of that. And these games are going to be playable in, like, your Facebook news feed or your Facebook Messenger. So just, like, quick ways to load into these games. The only reason I bring this up, even though most people here probably won't give a shit about these, this will attract some publishers to try out putting their games on Stadia. Or not Stadia, on Facebook Gaming. Because of the large amount of people signed up for Facebook.
Yeah, the user base, the install base, for sure.
They're all free-to-play stuff. But...
yeah, it's super fascinating, though, because I feel like that they, I don't know if they, you know, if they will or won't, but Facebook could take really large advantage of this, of going through their streamers, their popular streamers, and maybe paying them or incentivizing them to play these games. And then while you're watching them play, you can play.
Yeah,
like that's a pretty big deal. If it, you know, if something catches fire, like if, you know, catches on with, you know, like if there's 4 or 5 free to play games, one of them might be okay, one of them might be fun to play, and then if you can kind of play or interact with the streamer, or, you know, that's what that's what a lot of people like to do, or the, you know, so, but again, it's all going to be dependent on if they can get the streamers to play the games and how they and how they're going to or not going to do that. Facebook has been very aggressive. Even prior to Mixer's shutdown, with some of the streamers that they went after, you know, for some contracts, they weren't going as big as Mixer was, but they also did inherit a lot of people from the Mixer transition. Pretty much saying, if you're already a Mixer partner, your status stays the same with Facebook. They kind of gave them an easy entry point to come there, and now that they can, you know, use something in there of it could be maybe in the future contract of like, hey, you get a better, you know, rate for your stars if you play our games for 5 hours a week, something like that.
Yeah, they can easily do some crazy incentives for it. Right now the launch lineup is nothing special. We're looking at Asphalt 9 Legends, which is just like, I feel like I have seen that franchise in the Android store forever.
Well, they're not going to be crazy if you can play them on like Messenger, because like that's going to be mobile based. So
yeah, but like these are streaming services, so you're basically just opening up a browser and then playing from the streaming you know, like a Stadia-like experience. So these games will eventually probably get a little bit more, like, impressive or, like, bigger quality, depending on if Facebook cares about this. Mobile Legends Avengers, Adventure, PGA Tour, Golf Shootout, Solitaire, Arthur's Tale, WWE Supercard, and Dirt Bike Unchained. So just, like, basic mobile free-to-play bullshit. The thing that you need to watch for is Facebook owns Oculus.
Mm-hmm.
Oculus is already forcing people to make Facebook accounts if you want to play on the Oculus. Mm-hmm. Like, you can't opt out of that anymore. So Facebook is in the gaming business right now. It's mostly in VR. They can easily, if they want to turn this into a thing, they have all the money in the world. They have developers through Oculus. They can start probably putting bigger games. This is basically their test run. They're not going to do the thing where Stadia, when they did their beta test, they used Assassin's Creed Odyssey with it, you know, right, to like really impress people and show you like, this is the future of gaming. And it was really impressive, but they didn't have a game plan. These Facebook looks like they are actually going to go with like the bare minimum, like beta test, before building up if they decide they want to build this up.
Mm-hmm. It's too much. I mean, like it with, you know, Amazon and Stadia and xCloud and Facebook and, you know, all these other things now, like there's rumors of what we've already been talking about. And I've been saying that I wanted to see an app for Game Pass or for xCloud.
And they're talking about hardware.
I don't want to see a streaming stick for Xbox, but I mean, I don't want to see an Amazon Fire Stick style or Roku thing for Xbox, but I mean, what are you
but
do?
If what would but if there's like a $40 stick to get xCloud on your TV,
yeah, I mean,
probably
yes,
consider it.
The ability to better connect to a controller versus trying to, you know, use a browser. I mean, I don't know. We'll talk about that a little bit because I did play a little bit more xCloud. So
yeah. So we just have just another big company in it. This only scares me because Facebook does have the money to buy studios if they wanted to give this a big go and lock up some studios, like how Amazon has like locked up and are holding some studios prisoner, it seems. Mm-hmm. This is just more of an arms race, and people forget like PS Now is on PC. So like there's a lot of streaming options available right now, and only a few publishers like third-party publishers that are like available to like hop on all these different platforms. So we're still in an arms race, and now Facebook will fight Amazon and Microsoft and
Google.
Well,
it's just a bunch of publishers now. Like that's the, you know, like you got Ubisoft, you got EA, you got, you know, Xbox, you got, you know, Facebook, you got Amazon. Like these are all people that publish games, and they want all of their profits instead of trying to find something that's like, I would almost rather see, I mean, I know it, like I'm just using it as an example. I'd almost rather see Ubisoft partner with Microsoft and put their games on xCloud.
But they have their own streaming service that they want to pimp, so like they're less incentivized.
Too much stuff. I mean,
yeah. It's funny, we're having the problem that the cable stuff went through, where like no, everyone wanted to get rid of cable because there was just like too many channels. People only watched a couple, and then internet providers came in and made it a la carte. But it was such a mess to try and cobble together a thing to where, you know, you used to pay cable like $120 a month for, but then you replaced it with like, okay, so I'm gonna get a Netflix subscription.
I used to pay $120, but now I pay $10 for 12 apps.
Yeah, yeah. So and that's exactly what's going on. And it's just like, oh, yeah, I used to buy my games at $70, but no, I pay Microsoft $15 a month. I pay Stadia $9 a month. I pay Uplay 50. You know, yeah. Like you kind of go
all,
into
like,
this thing.
Those are all valid things. Like it's the same conversation we've had about Netflix before, too. Like those are all valid. Like if you, for whatever reason, if there's the 10% use you get out of Netflix is worth the 100% of the cost. The 90, everybody's like, well, if you look at 90% of what's on Netflix is trash. And it's like, yeah, but I only care about this 10%.
Yeah.
You know, so it's like that, you know, that makes it, you know, worth it. You know, like if, you know, I don't know off the top of my head, like how much Xbox Live cost individually right now. But if you're going to pay $10 or $12 or, you know, like, I don't even know, like $8 a month for Xbox Live, $60 or $70 for Xbox Live for a year, and you could get Game Pass for an extra $100 with Live and get access to all these games. I was in a Twitter conversation with somebody the other day, and I was running the math. Like, if you are a Bethesda fan, as an example, and you want to play Doom, Elder Scrolls, and Fallout, and if those three games come out in 2022, you could spend $210 on them at $70 a piece, or you can get a year of Game Pass for $180.
Yeah.
Like,
the cost thing is definitely going to play a big part in it. I don't know. Do you see Facebook sticking with this? Like, we're worried about Google. Like, do you see Facebook sticking?
I'd have to see what these games turn into being and how they use their streamers. Like, I don't want to say yes. I don't want to say no until I get to see how they actually do it.
That's fair enough.
Because they made some games like, oh God, I'm gonna date myself. Like Farkle, when you were playing Farkle on Facebook. The dice game Farkle, like a Yahtzee style game.
Oh, okay. You could have said Farmville.
Yeah,
which
okay,
they just
that
killed
too.
Those servers.
Yeah, but like, I mean that was a thing for quite a while.
Yeah,
and it was, and we all got those. Your friend just added corn to their farm. If you like this status, they get extra corn. Like I don't want it to be to that extent, but I could see them doing something like you hang out in King Gathalion's chat for 2.5 hours, you get extra points in your game.
I don't know how many friends I deleted because they were playing that Mafia Quest game or mm-hmm. Farmville stuff, where that stuff is just all just like going through and just piling up. And I don't know. They have the money, they have the resources to make this big if they want to, and to introduce people. It's just gonna be a matter of what deals they sign or what companies they end up purchasing. But who knows? We might have put more time into this discussion than Facebook will actually put into the discussion of the future of this.
I don't know, man. They're doing a pretty good job with the gaming stuff, like separate apps and the way that they are able to allow people to interact. They've really been, from the streaming standpoint, they've done a cool job of like what Twitch can't do and build a community when the streamer's offline. Ability to use pages and groups and stuff that, like, Twitch, if you're not live, like, yeah, like, some people hang out in people's Twitch chats when they're not live, but for the most part, like, that kind of just gets used as a bulletin board. But this way, like, the streamer can put, you know, like put a post up like we do, like, hey, what's your favorite thing, or what are you guys doing this weekend, and it builds, you know, interaction and community amongst the people. And I think if they're able to integrate rewards into these games for that, especially from a free-to-play game, I'm okay with it because the game's free to play.
Yeah. Let's move on though before we get too deep into this more than we already have. Okay, so this one's just a quick story. I think this is kind of cool. A bunch of PS4 first party games have been getting patched over the last like 2 weeks. Mm-hmm. Some of these patches
I mean, everybody called, not we did, but we knew that this was coming.
Some sort of work being done. Two games of note that were patched that people saw the differences right away on PS4. The Last of Us Remastered and Until Dawn, they were patched to where their load times are basically non-existent. The theory behind this is they needed to patch them so they'd work better on PS5, which I guess maybe makes sense. But there's also a rumor that Sucker Punch may have worked on some really good compression stuff, mm-hmm. Which is why Ghost of Tsushima doesn't really have load screens. So Sony's just implementing whatever compression Sucker Punch came up with on some of their older first party games, so those games work a little bit better. I have a weird feeling that all the games that we're seeing getting compressed and whatever, or getting these patches, are part of that instant collection mm-hmm. that we'll see day one for PS5. So they're just making sure that that instant game collection is like fine-tuned and ready to go day one.
I mean, we probably all know that there's going to be at least a 7-day PS Plus trial in your box, right?
Yeah, I would assume so. Which none of us will be able to use because, you know.
No, but somebody will. And if they want to make sure that collection runs well.
Yeah, and really show, especially if you can't buy some of the games, you know, with your console.
Show the value. Like, hey, give us $60, you can play these 10 games. As long as you're, you know, for the next year.
Yeah. I do think it's great, though, that, like, on the PS4, these have had improved loading times with it, which I think is, like, a cool little bonus for people that are still on the system.
I think it's also, like you said, it's learning, you know, it's learning from other developers of what they've been able to successfully utilize the PS4 hardware for, learning what they're using some of the stuff that they're maybe learning using the PS5 hardware with the SSD in it, and then also just maybe they knew that they could do this, but there was never a real incentive to do it. Like, why go back and patch Last of Us Remastered when the player base is lower? Okay, now we're moving it to PS5. We want it to perform well on PS5. It's worth the investment now. It's the same conversation we used to have about, is it worth it for a developer to develop a PS Pro version and a PS4 version, or is just do the PS4 version and let the Pro do whatever it does?
Yeah, let the extra hardware take care of the rest. Other games that were patched, God of War 3 and then God of War 2018.
To be running at 60 frames per second on PS5.
No, confirmed. Santa Monica came out and said it's running 60 frames on PS5, and then we'll have cross save as well.
Yeah.
So that's good for there. I'm assuming load time. So God of War 2018, I don't know how they would handle improving load times, because I don't know if you remember, Dave, if
it's
you
like
played God
cut.
Of War.
Yeah.
No. So not only one cut. So the game did have load screens. In between areas, they would drop Kratos into this weird walking path thing where he would just like walk into circles until
when he was changing realms. Yeah.
Yeah. When he was changing realms, that was like the loading screen for that. I wonder how that's handled.
Right.
On like PS5 with the SSD.
Too, they did a really good job, much like a lot of first party developers do, of kind of hiding a load screen behind a dialogue scene.
Yes, yeah, that's
so like Kratos
exactly
is walking to a different realm and he's having a conversation, or he's telling a story similar to the stories that he would tell when you're on when you're in the boat, which again was still loading. Maybe as you were going over the horizon, it was kind of loading
stuff
the next
to do.
Area.
Yeah.
So it's similar to when they talked about when Epic did that demo where they said, you know, when the character has to squeeze through the wall, you know, like that we always see all the time. So I think that, you know, that'll be interesting because, like, is Kratos going to all of a sudden, like, speak 50% faster now during one of this?
Yeah. So other games that were patched too, Concrete Genie was patched. That came out in 2018, so that makes sense. Mm-hmm. Tearaway was patched as well, which, like, it's a first party game, and
this might lean into future PS Plus titles.
Yeah, it could be future PS Plus titles. It could be games coming to the Instant Game Collection, or it could be the game just wasn't compatible for whatever reason with the PS5, and then they told their first party developers, like, we need to make sure all of these first party games work without an issue, or they found an issue and then patched it through. So I guess expect over the next like couple weeks to see some like maybe larger titles or like first party titles to like get some sort of small patch as they like do stuff to prep for the launch. But it's definitely something to keep an eye on, especially in the case of The Last of Us Remastered and Until Dawn, where it just kind of just removes loading screens or it cuts them down to 14 seconds in some instances.
Now that we look at it, like, did it ever bother you, the load times on Last of Us or God of War?
God of War did the Assassin's Creed thing where they just load you into areas and you just kind of kill time, but at least there's something to do in God of War because they're giving you dialogue.
The only thing I remember from Last of Us has always been like the start screen, like when you're first starting the game up, but I don't remember like any of the load times being
I guess when you die, you have to load back in. Maybe that would help, but I usually play The Last of Us on like easy or medium difficulty, so I didn't really die too much.
Yeah.
So I wasn't too frustrated. But any sort of improvement for load screens, because I get annoyed at load screens, but it's usually that initial load that is the more annoying and problematic one. Okay. Continuing with PS5, the last two things are all PS5 related, because Microsoft is kind of...
Fanboy.
Yeah, Microsoft's kind of gone into like their.
Although they did show the whole UI today, so
yeah, unedited UI. Yeah. So Microsoft's—they're not doing anything flashy because they've done everything that I think you could do
they put the console
launch
in people's hands and let the people talk about it.
Yeah.
So like, yeah.
And speaking of which, PS5 is now in the hands of media and influencers, so we will start
not saying
to see.
Anything.
So apparently unboxing videos are embargoed for this week. So we'll by the time I think this is out, the unboxing videos will be out for pretty much everybody. I think all they were able to show is the tissue paper and the outer box. last week. So we're going to start seeing stuff. So hopefully we'll get some in-depth video. I don't know if Digital Foundry got one. I hope Digital Foundry got one because I want to see what they think of some of this hardware. But that is whatever, the last news story, which hit today, Destruction All-Stars has been delayed to 2021, and it is now a PS Plus game that will be out in February. Those that pre-ordered this digitally or at retail, will be refunded. And this was the game I think we were worried about as a launch game, just because it was like a $70 game that we kind of thought would be a lot less. But let's just have some fun. Dave, theorize why they did this.
Because nobody's pre-ordering it?
I'm guessing.
The perception is it's not a $70 launch title?
Yeah, so... yeah, I think...
not good?
No, so I don't think that. I don't think that it's not good.
No, I just...
Yeah. I'm guessing the pre-order numbers were kind of low. They might have needed more time, just because... developing games is the hardest work right
now. Why not just make it a plus title now?
Yeah, which makes me think that they want to add some extra polish.
Yep.
And three, I think this shows you that they're confident in this game, but they know realistically no one's going to want to spend $70 on it. So they want to give this game the best chance possible, and to do that would be to make it a PS Plus game.
Yeah.
Like, if they see a long future in this multiplayer... PS Plus would be the best way to do it. Look at Fall Guys. Look at Rocket League.
How many trailers have we seen for this game?
It's been in like every PS5 thing. I think.
Okay. And we've seen Miles Morales played. We've seen all these other things like multiple trailers, story trailers, games being, you know, is being played. And it's like, and then it's like, oh yeah, by the way, Destruction All-Stars is still coming. So I think that, you know, it maybe, like, to your point, like, maybe it's ready, you know, it's like it's ready as in it's playable, but yeah. Maybe there's some quality of life stuff that they still want to work on that it's better just to hold it. Maybe it has extensive microtransactions in it, and maybe the feedback they were getting was like, hey, you're really going to charge $70 for this game and have this many kind of things in it? So they're like, okay, let's just give it away with Plus, and then maybe we can just hide the fact that, you know, it has all these things in it. I'm not saying that it does or doesn't.
Yeah.
You know, or, you know, this is a great, you know, PS Plus seller. And maybe, you know, like kind of like what I talked about, like maybe there's a 90-day PS Plus subscription in there. And this is at the end of the 90 days to maybe incentivize people to continue PS Plus. I'm just guessing.
I don't think that's possible, but,
It's another carrot on like whether it's a 60-day thing. So like, you know, like at the end of January, it's like, you know, it's like, hey, your subscription is expiring, but, you know, re-up and get Destruction All-Stars next month. Like in terms of using it kind of as like a marketing thing, you know, like when they used to have the Instant Game Collection on that was advertised all over the box, like play these 9 games or whatever it was. So it could be like some kind of marquee title that, you know, that we're running. Chandler on Twitter was like even saying today that he's wondering, like, are we going to get PS5 games for Plus in November and December, or is this kicking off PS5 games in February? Is this all part of the program?
I hope not. I hope we're getting something, even if it's some of the older games.
Yeah, because we had Rezogun at the launch of PS4.
Yeah,
but I guess the PS Plus trailers.
Yeah, I guess the PS Plus thing for November is going to be the Instant Game Collection. Yeah. So they can get away with November, but I think they need something December, January for people. Even though they don't have to if they're going to be 20 games, day one for Plus. But
we don't
like,
have those indie games right now. Like, we don't have Rezogun. We don't have...
I was surprised Bugsnax wasn't.
Yeah. What was the game at launch on PS4?
Contrast.
Contrast, yeah. Like, there's not these cool, like, because they're not super... In tandem with indies right now, I think indies have kind of actually leveled off in general or have moved over to Switch.
Switch and Game Pass.
I mean, they don't have that relationship to where they can use the PS Plus games to, you know, to help with that. So it's interesting. Like, at first, when I first saw this story, it was posted in our Discord, and I was like, I missed that it was delayed, and I was like, wait, you're telling us it's going to be free in February. You just shot all your sales in the foot. I'm like, oh, it's delayed. So it is weird to delay, like to announce a delay, like essentially like 14, or whatever it is, 20 days before console launch.
They probably looked at the pre-order numbers and realized it wasn't going to affect too many people, and those people will be refunded anyways.
Yeah.
So I'm wondering if this game was ever really planned for launch at this point, because to your point, there have been no gameplay trailers or anything extensive for this game.
The communication is weird, though, because like we found out like 2 weeks ago that Bugsnax is going to be a launch title, but they didn't talk about that being a launch title when they announced, here's our launch lineup. And I'm like, what is going
everything,
on?
Yeah, everything is like coming in hot. But what gives me confidence is the PS5s are at least in hands of medium publishers now, so it's not coming in as hot as we were thinking. But yeah, the software
is being
stuff.
Developed exclusively for PlayStation, I believe, right?
And PC, yeah.
Okay. But I don't get why you wouldn't list something like that. As you took the time to list Destruction All-Stars as a launch title, but not to list Bugsnax as a launch title. You knew when it was coming out. Like, Sony knew when it was coming out.
It is a really small team, so I can see maybe them just still trying to work out the finer details of it. But I don't know. I actually, when I saw this delay for this, I thought maybe it was a sign that PlayStation is a little bit more confident in this game than I really thought they were just going to let this game come out and die.
Oh, yeah, Rocket Arena written all over it to me.
Yeah, and that was my fear. But the fact that they're like, hey, you know what? We've never announced a PS Plus game this far in advance. We're announcing it. We're putting it on the map. You know, like, this is going to be our tent pole for February.
Yeah, I mean, the last time something like this bit them was Drive Club.
True, but that was a bad messaging, because it was like, there's Drive Club, and then there's Drive Club PS Plus. Like, right. This is at least, hey, this is Destruction All-Stars, the game that costs $70. It's going to be free
it's just
in
like,
February.
I can only compare it to the PS4 launch or to the, you know, like, and I can't compare it to Xbox, because Xbox doesn't have any, like, major launch titles at launch, next-gen launch titles at launch. But, like, again, going back to, like, Killzone, Shadowfall, and Infamous Second Son, and, you know, Rezogun, like, they were showing the game, they were showing trailers, there was launch trailers, you know, that were coming out a week before the consoles were coming out. You knew what was coming, like, you know, like, and so this one, the more I thought about it today, I'm like, well, we really haven't seen anything. Like, we just know it's like a Destruction Derby type game.
Yeah.
That's all we really knew.
So. Yeah, but we'll hopefully now see a bunch of stuff in December, January, leading up to this. Because this was going to get lost in the shuffle. Like, this absolutely was going to get lost. Like, everyone is picking up Miles Morales or Demon's Souls.
Yeah, like, and I think even, like, Sackboy would have outsold it.
Yeah, Sackboy would have outsold it, and Sackboy will probably sell more on PS4 just because there's more PS4s out there right now. So,
I don't think we'll ever hear that. Like, what you just said. I think we'll hear Sackboy sold X copies. I don't think we'll ever
across hear. Across PlayStation platforms, yeah.
Correct. I don't think we'll ever hear, like, Miles Morales did this much on PS5. Like, it'll just be just similar to how they talk about PlayStation 4 numbers. This many consoles sold. Well, how many pros? We sold this many consoles. How many pros did you sell?
Yeah.
Did we tell you we sold this many consoles?
Yeah. Well, and that's a smart business, because they don't want to make their new console seem less exciting.
It was a concern that we talked about, like, you know, with Ratchet and Clank. Like, if it's going to be exclusive to PS5, or, you know, I'll be interested to see Demon's Souls numbers. Mm-hmm. Because he can only be played on PS5.
Yeah.
So, and then depending on how many, you know, and within the first 90 days, like, how many PS5s sell? How many of those people that buy a PS5 buy Demon's Souls? Like, that attach rate is going to be fascinating to me.
Oh, yeah, that attach rate's going to be... How hard will that community come out for Demon's Souls?
Right.
Like, because it is a big community, but is it a community...
$400 console seller?
Yes, and that's going to be pretty key for that.
And right now, that is the, I believe, other than Bugsnax, that is the only PS5 exclusive title.
Launch. If you don't count PC for Bugsnax.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's going to be, like, Miles Morales has the opportunity to do Nintendo-like attach rates.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, remember the Zelda attach rate was like...
Yeah.
66%, or it was like some like two-thirds
on the Wii. It was like absurd.
Yeah, it was the Switch,
the Wii U,
and the Switch. Yeah,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
To where Miles Morales is the game to get, regardless of if you don't think it's a full game or not. Yeah. Like, it is the game to get for the PS5, and I think a majority of the user base is going to end up picking that up.
And then Insomniac has to be working on Spider-Man 2 at this point in time.
Oh, yeah. No, Insomniac might as well just change your name to Spider-Man Developers.
Right.
Like, this is what they're going to be doing with the occasional Ratchet and Clank game coming out in between. This is what Insomniac, like, all their focus on is going to be building out the Spider-Man. And I wonder, there's one thing I don't think enough people are talking about. What if Miles Morales is really popular? People love the Spider-Verse. I love the Spider-Verse movie. Mm-hmm. What is Spider-Man 2 going to look like if they have to put Miles Morales into the background again? Mm-hmm. Like, I want to know that balance.
Or they have almost, you know, they could have the potential to have two similar franchises running coherent with each other. A Miles mm-hmm. Morales franchise and a Peter Parker franchise.
Yeah.
Where they kind of cross over as they deem necessary. Like, you could have a 5 or 7 year or longer development out of this, depending on how long, you know, Spider-Man is Spider-Man, just like Batman is Batman. Like, they carry weight for a long time. And if yep. they can coherently run and interweave these into each other and do it well, you could have Uncharted type story telling for, yeah. you know, 10 years. However,
like,
long
you
Uncharted
do the, yeah. you do the full game experience for Spider-Man proper, and then the smaller stories for Miles Morales. Like, they could do that, and they can turn this into an annual franchise if they want. It'd probably be successful for a couple years.
Well, if they did
before
the,
people burn out,
if they did the numbered Spider-Man and then Spider-Man Miles Morales colon something, and then
yeah.
so you have Spider-Man Miles Morales, you have Spider-Man 2, you have Spider-Man Miles Morales colon something, you have Spider-Man 3, you have Spider-Man Miles Morales colon something, where they're doing the 14 to 16 or 14 to 20 hour Spider-Man adventure, and then the 6 to 9 hour Miles Morales adventure every other year.
Yeah.
Like, I think
and then you can build storytelling around, and then they pass the torch, and then you retire Peter Parker, and mm-hmm.
They can carry Nathan Drake level storytelling.
Yes. With a way broader appeal in terms of sales. All right. That's it. That's all I had for news. Pretty light week until we get into the craziness in less than 3 weeks away. By the time yeah. this episode is out on podcast feeds, we'll be 2 weeks away.
Right.
I believe.
That
right?
sounds about right. Yeah, it's close.
Yeah.
Because it'll
yeah.
be out like on the 29th and they come out, yeah.
On the 12th.
Close. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. So what we're planning on watching. So for me, it's pretty short, but I am actually, so one of the things I just remembered too, I got to play more Immortals Fenyx Rising. Significantly amount more time. I think I got to play like 4 or 5 hours. I got to play from the beginning. The first 15 minutes of gameplay is up on our YouTube channel. If you want to check that out, there's no commentary on it. It's just literally the first 15 minutes of the story. If you don't want to be spoiled, don't watch it. Don't comment that you didn't know what it was. Don't be that guy. it brought up some conversations before, like I've even mentioned before, but like, this is 100% inspired by Breath of the Wild, like 100%. This is Greek Zelda, and at this point in time, I'm kind of for it. The first thing that I want to say is this game is significantly bigger than I was thinking it was. I even said in like the first time I played it, I thought that this felt like a 10 to 15 hour story game, and mm-hmm. now I've played it for 6 to 8 hours, and I don't really think I've kind of scratched the surface of it.
But is it like that Ubisoft style long game? Or does it feel like it's getting away from that? You know what I mean? That Ubisoft blueprint.
Yes and no, because it's similar to Zelda and similar to how these other things have gone, where like you have different, I believe there's 7 different areas in the Greek mythology where you are, and you unlock the areas by progressing in them. And each of those areas has a god that you need to help. That's part of the story. Mm-hmm. So it's almost like, I don't want to compare it to this because I liked it and I hated it, but it's kind of like it feels a little similar to Far Cry 5's campaign, where you were kind of clearing out the two brothers and the sister to get to Joseph Sneed. But each area kind of had the north, the southeast, the southwest, each had their own what I called, like, even in the review I wrote, like a mini kind of campaign where it had like, you know, the character development. And the little bit that I was playing is that, you know, you were trying to help free a god, and you were fighting through, you know, certain things and developing through puzzles and managing through that stuff. I was really enjoying what I was playing. I think that this game is coming out at an awful time. Awful time.
To really? December isn't that bad.
But on the heels of Cyberpunk, Watch Dogs, Call of Duty, Assassin's Creed, Spider-Man, Demon Souls. Like, these games are taking up people's time. I think it may sell well a month after launch. Like, it might sell well, like, post-Christmas. It doesn't have the, like, the box art looks cool, but I don't think it has the, it doesn't have the, oh, grab me off the shelf for my kid to play for Christmas a feel to it right now, because it's a new IP. I love that it's a new IP. I've talked about that before, that I love to see developers make new IPs and not keep building on what they have already. But at the same time, they just put a new name on something and you can glide like you did in Zelda Breath of the Wild. There's no weapon, diminishment. You can pay to progress faster in this game. There's microtransactions, and there's also ways to earn in-game currencies. There's customization. So nothing I played, the second session was new, there was new story stuff, but nothing was like, there was no new game mechanic introduced. I still haven't had a chance to do like a dungeon boss, or I fought some bosses before, during progressing through a quest, but I'd be wondering if there is a boss that I fight to progress the story farther. And I haven't seen if that would have any different kind of game mechanics. If that doesn't, cause that's, to me, that's where Zelda always shined. Like, Zelda always has and does have really cool, in-game moments of as you're progressing through, but some of the most fun you have in Zelda is the, figuring out the boss's pattern, and then trying to progress through there. So, there's the first 15 minutes of gameplay on YouTube. I'm planning on, hopefully, if I get some time, doing another video. I did get like a character boost that I could use in the game, that I could, was able to upgrade a lot of stuff. And it does have that open world feel of where you're going to be kind of walking around, picking up materials, using those materials to make yourself stronger. And if you make yourself stronger, you can go through enemies faster. I don't see a level system, but I definitely see an increase your damage system, to where I feel like you'd be, at a certain point in time, you kind of running amok through the game and just dominating, depending on how diligent. There are those people that play those open world games that go around and collect every little thing and power themselves up, and then they go fight the first boss and they walk up to him and they flick him. I don't have a good time playing games like that. I kind of almost like to have that little bit of a challenge. So I'll be curious to how they handle that. And it might stop you from, they keep saying it's an open world game that you can go to any region you want. So, but then I have a hard time, how do you tell the correct story with that? But that also leads me to believe that each of the gods that you help is going to be their own self-contained story, which is good and bad. So if you haven't checked any of that stuff out, I've got Impressions of Immortals on the YouTube channel from a couple months ago, and I've got the story thing from just like a couple weeks ago. Then I've still been messing around playing Knack with Owen just a little bit, but I didn't do a good job this week, and I said I was going to talk about it a little bit more, and I forgot to post pictures of it. So this Android controller that we picked up is it's IFYOO. So it's an Android Bluetooth controller, IFYOO One Pro wireless controller for PS4, iOS, and Android. So it obviously works on those platforms. The thing that's really cool about it is it comes with a controller mount. That you can adjust the position, and it holds my phone. It holds my Samsung S9 Plus, and it connects really easy. It's PlayStation based, so when I'm playing xCloud, the buttons on my controller are different than the buttons that are on the screen. But
yeah,
that is what it is. The triggers feel really good. The face buttons feel good. The controls are very well. I played Dead Cells on xCloud in bed the other night while I was watching baseball. I just kind of took the controller and put it in there and had the baseball game on the TV, and I was messing around in Dead Cells. I hadn't played Dead Cells before. So that was through through xCloud. And that's a little bit of a precision platformer. I didn't have very much of a problem. I suck at the game. I only played it for 15 or 20 minutes. But I have dabbled a little bit in Destiny with this. And I just think that comparing the two, Dead Cells runs better on mobile than Destiny does. And okay. I think that has to do with just how broad of a game Destiny is compared to how not broad of a game Dead Cells is, if that makes sense, in terms of what's going on the screen and what they're trying to accomplish and things like that that are happening in the game, along with varied Wi-Fi connections and
an always online aspect of Destiny,
right?
Technically,
yeah. It'll be interesting. I need to dabble in a little bit more games. I did run into an interesting problem. So my Xbox One is downstairs in my office where I am now. It's unplugged right now, And when I went to I wanted to check out Ori and the Blind Forest on mobile, on xCloud. It had actually told me that I'm still playing it on Xbox, so I couldn't, like, I couldn't play it. So
that's a weird
thing. So I don't know if, like, it's, you know, because I wouldn't, like, I would, like, I felt like my Xbox One always kind of just immediately goes into rest resume mode, even like when I say turn off console, like if I don't quit the game. I don't know if that has to do with, like, it's still, I haven't tried again, and I should probably try again now because I haven't tried again for a couple days. But the reason why my Xbox is unplugged is because I was trying to use my Xbox controller to play Immortals through my remote connection, and it kept connecting to my Xbox because I use the same controller for my PC and for my Xbox. Usually it's not a problem when the Xbox was upstairs, but I brought it down here because I was dumb and I wanted to stream from the Xbox when I forgot I could just stream from my gaming PC on Xbox games.
Yeah.
So that, you know, for the most part, that's it for playing for me. Watching, we watched, you know, a little bit of the baseball, the World Series. I watched the Lions win a game, and Todd Gurley being the 2020 meme of him not trying to score but still scores. I don't know if you saw those highlights where he tried to not fall into the end zone.
I just know it involved the Falcons, yeah. So it made sense.
He tried not to fall in the end zone, and he still fell in the end zone. Yeah. Yeah, for the most part, like, just kind of relaxing a little bit at the same time. I mean, I'm in the middle of changing locations at work, so my commute's getting a little bit longer. But I've just been a little bit more tired as, you know, things that are going on and just getting ready. I mean, for me, it's Watch Dogs is coming up and Destiny 2 Beyond Light's coming up. The new consoles are coming up. So there's definitely some stuff that I want to play and you know, and get ready for, as well as figure out how I'm going to afford all of it.
Yeah. So. Okay. So for me, pretty light. The only game of note that I've been playing, because again, I don't want to just reiterate, like, my go-to games when I'm tired from work, of like Fall Guys, Tony Hawk, Overwatch. So the one new game I'm playing is, I picked up Hades on the Switch.
Nice.
Hades is from Supergiant Games, the makers of Bastion and Transistor. This was in early access, I think, since 2018. And it officially had its release in September, last month, on PC and on Switch. So I decided to pick it up on Switch because it's a, like, isometric top-down roguelike dungeon crawler. And it felt like a good idea for a Switch game, just in handheld mode. This is how I play the Switch most of the time. So this game, because it's a roguelike, you know, every time you die, you restart. And the gameplay for this game has just been really fun and addicting.
I've heard really, really good things about this.
It's really good. Like, the writing is good. The art is fantastic. It's been a Twitter thirst trap for the last, like, month or so, as people are just, like, super attracted to all the characters, because characters are super attractive. And it's just really fun gameplay mechanics that are addicting, which a roguelike needs. And I love the story. For some reason, I think it's probably because Sarah's been playing Assassin's Creed Odyssey. I've been on, like, a Greek mythology kick lately. So this fit in perfectly. You play the son of Hades, who's been granted access to Olympus, but in order to do that, he needs to get out of Hades. Out of the underworld. So that is, like, the core mechanic, is, like, your father Hades is, like, you're not going to make it out of here. You're just going to keep dying. Every time you die, you're just going to end up right back in front of me. And that is, like, the loop where you're trying to get as far as you can. You die, you end up right back in front of your dad. And he just, you know, talks shit to you, and then you learn a little bit about the story, talking into all the other different gods that are also in
the
underworld.
Which is very common for roguelikes. Oh, you're back again. Nice job.
Yeah, but this one, at least there's a little bit better writing in this. It's a little deeper than most roguelikes, yeah, where they just give you, like, one-liners. There's at least a little bit more going with the story here. All the other gods that are on Olympus, they basically send you messages to kind of encourage you to, like, make it up. So they will drop abilities down to you. You lose those abilities, but you do gain XP and you get keys to unlock different weapons for your other runs. So there's incentive, and each time you die, you do feel like you're getting a little bit better based on like how many keys you unlock to unlock a new weapon, or how many points you got to increase your dash or your special attack. So every time I die, I'm not getting annoyed, which is difficult for roguelikes. I feel like I'm improving, and each time I do play, I get a little bit further than I did last time. And I'm not quite willing to jump into the god mode, because they do have an accessibility god mode that makes the game pretty easy for you to play if you just care about the story. So haven't got to the point where I want to click that button yet, but I like that that option is there for me, you know, if I do get like annoyed that I keep dying. So I'm really happy with that. It runs really well on the Switch, or at least in the early going. I'm still like in the, like, I think there's like four or five, I think it's four like biomes or whatever, like different areas that you're going through. So I've only been in like the first area and a little bit of the second area. And it runs pretty well. I don't know if the other areas get more advanced and I'm going to start seeing the usual thing that you see with Switch games, you know, where they run a little bad. Yeah, so far none of that. Like, the art style works really well, and the mechanics work really well with the Switch in handheld mode, though I might start putting it on my TV, because the Joy-Cons, I just feel, are just too delicate. Like, yeah, especially those analog sticks. I just bought new Joy-Cons. I don't want to break
really
these analog
like that,
sticks.
That extra controller I got, that those little grips. But I know at the same time, it kind of defeats the portability purpose of the console. So.
And yeah, like, I might pick those up, though, just because, like those extra grips, I really like those, because I prefer to play handheld. So I might end up picking those up, just because they're cheaper than if I break my Joy-Cons, which are like $80. Especially, like, I don't know what it is about left Joy-Cons. Like, I already feel this one
drifting,
like, starting to get crappy, and it's just like the right Joy-Con's a champ and not breaking on me, but that left Joy-Con.
The left one is how you move.
I know, but like, it's just, I do, like, when I play sideways, like, even when you put the controllers, like, next to each other and you play, like, just with one, something about that left analog stick, just the left one. So that has been like my primary game to play. Much like you, I'm just kind of waiting for all the other games to come out, and then I'm going to have no time and too many games to play. Because I'm looking at like day one PlayStation. Like, I'm playing Miles Morales. I'll probably play it in one sitting if it really is like 6 to 10 hours. Mm-hmm. And then I'm just like trying to, I don't know about you, Dave, you have a little bit more space to work with, but I'm like already looking of just like, okay, now that we know what the PS5 size is and it's been in people's hands, so I can see pictures of it. Mm-hmm. Trying to figure out how I'm going to set up this PS5 in like my living room and my desk area, and going back and forth between them. It better be super quiet, because I have a feeling I'm going to have to put the PS5 like right here on my desk next to my microphone for me to play. So hopefully it is actually as quiet as they say. Because I don't even know if it's going to fit on my like little entertainment stand. Because like under my entertainment stand, I have like the shelf that I use for the games. I don't know if it's going to actually fit there unless I like take some stuff apart so I can give it ample space to actually like rest there, because it's not going vertical. Like, I have no space for it vertically. But yeah, that's it for me. I haven't even really been watching stuff. Me and Sarah are still going through like scary movies, but we haven't had a really good one in a while. They've all been kind of like middling.
My wife tried to bribe her to send baked goods to our house, and she doesn't want to.
Yeah, she's been making like Halloween like cookies and cupcakes and stuff. So I've been enjoying that. So just getting ready for Halloween, and Halloween will be weird, which we talked about in our Patreon episode about how we're doing Halloween in 2020. But yeah, that's it for me. I watched a little bit of the World Series. I got to see like the mistake bullshit that happened with the Rays, which just cracked me up.
Yeah.
But I haven't been watching too much of that. I watched a little bit of wrestling, but even then, like, I couldn't tell you what happened at the wrestling thing I watched, because it's like I'm just super tired after work and just sit down and like I just need something mindless for me to watch, because I can't concentrate on playing things until my day's off.
Right.
But that's it for me.
All right. Not a problem. We will go through some of these questions really quick, so you can send us your questions. #AskDigitalDays. On Twitter, put it in Facebook, put it in the group, put it in Discord, put it anywhere. You don't have to wait for us to ask. You can just send them to us. Like Robert did, he says, do you think Sony would ever bring back another handheld like the Vita? I've just started to play mine again, and I forgot how good it actually was. I don't, and I think that at this point in time that they would just use, similar to what Xbox is doing, they'll just use the cell phones as a way to do something if they were going to do anything like that. They might make Sony mobile-based games or cloud games.
Yeah, I don't think they do. If you would ask me, like, early in the PS4 generation, I would say, like, yeah, you know what? The Switch is doing, like, cool things. Maybe they'll look into that. But they're the number one best-selling console. I don't think they need to go back into the handheld market because they are number one in the home console market.
I think their first-party studios have moved on from mobile limitations, or not from handheld limitations as well.
I think you only get a portable PlayStation game if it's on a phone with PlayStation Now in the future. I liked the Vita in terms of how it was built, but I outside of Persona Golden, I didn't really play any Vita games long term.
I remember enjoying like Uncharted, and I played a lot of the PS3 God of Wars on Vita. Like, I got some good play time out of Vita, but not what I spent on it.
Yeah, like the Danganronpa games and Persona are the only games that like I spent significant time on the Vita for, and those are games that I didn't necessarily need to play on the Vita. You know, like I didn't feel like this was a Vita only experience or best on Vita.
And I don't think the Vita was a failure. It just didn't work for me. And like I said, because I just don't. If I commute anywhere, I'm holding a steering wheel. Like, so.
Yeah,
I,
yeah, and like, and I'm in Chicago, so I'm not playing a Vita on the bus.
Right. So it's just like I enjoyed the Switch. The most significant time that I've spent with the Switch since I bought it was when I was in a car for 20 hours, not driving all 20 hours. So.
Yeah, I don't see an incentive for Sony to go back into the mobile market or the portable handheld market, especially Switch is already dominating that, and Sony's dominating the home console. They have no reason to go for Switch's money, you know, not at all.
All right, Savage writes, I think he just put this in our Twitch chat today, tonight. So yes. You guys have talked about using Discord for parties on consoles. I don't know the service well. Besides cross-platform, what does Discord do better than parties on Xbox or PS4? I use Discord. Well, Michael uses Discord a lot, too. Just not with me.
I talk to you enough once a week. Jesus. And text message, Dave.
Yeah. I feel like the drop-in, drop-out aspect of Discord is very functional. The ability to communicate, to use Discord as a multi-function, as video chatting, voice chatting, and text chatting, within a confined space, I really like. And the other feature that I really, really like about it is the ability to individually turn up or down certain people.
Yeah. For me, it's, a server, you know, like a group, breaking down the chat into different rooms, I think is really nice. Like in our Discord server, you know, we have like an Ask Digital Days thing where if people want to ask us questions, they can go drop it in that. We have a spoiler room that we put to where if you want to spoil a game, that's like the safe space to go spoil a video game. You know, Dave has Destiny and Division 2 rooms, and we'll add more rooms based on what the community's playing. So I like that ability as opposed to on console where it's just, you just have one party chat.
But if you don't if you don't play Destiny or Division, you can just mute those channels and you don't have to worry about them. Like that's not your world. Like, and that's totally fine.
Yeah. And I can see who's on. I was just like, oh, Dave's on and he's in like the general chat, you know? So I know like he's not playing Destiny, or he could be playing Destiny, but if Dave wanted other people to know he's playing and to join him, he would go into the Destiny room and then people would know, like, oh, let me hop in with him that way. So I like that. And the audio quality is just so much better.
Like, yeah, I think that's dependent on
equipment based,
right? It's equipment based, but you can also adjust that. If somebody has a really hot mic, like I mentioned, you can turn them down.
Compression or the noise cancellation or whatever, noise gate.
Yep. So better. I mean, there's plenty. There's really cool things. And then I also think just the and like PlayStation kind of was doing this for a little while with the party chat, and I was like always confused as why they never really brought it to mobile. But sometimes people like to just like, hey, I just want to be part of the conversation. Like they're, you know, they're in there and like maybe they can't play, but you know, they're stuck at a doctor's appointment or they're, you know, they're waiting for something and they have good connection and they kind of just want to hang out and chat. Like just the, you know, just having a communal room or a, you know, just being, you know, like there's been people that have been just kind of hanging out in my PS4 party chats. Sometimes they play the same game I'm playing, sometimes they're not playing, but we're just kind of like just chatting, just hanging out and talking. And I think that's, you know, you could be doing that and playing a game on PC, and I could be playing a game on PS5, and you know, like there's, it's just I really like it. So.
Yeah, and PlayStation tried to do like the community space thing where you can make a dedicated community with a bunch of members, but I just felt it was so out of the way that like Digital Days has like two, which me and Dave didn't even create, but like some listeners made like Digital Days Gaming like communities on PS4, and I love that they did that, but it's one of those things where you have to actively be seeking it out. It doesn't really bring that to your attention that those exist or there's actual activity going on. So like if they can somehow bring the community's aspect more into like the voice chat party chat thing, which is something I think they're going to do, that could be really big to make it feel more social as opposed to now on console. You just join a party chat because you're going to play the specific game with the people in a party chat, you know, like, you know, I don't really hang out in the party chats on PlayStation just because I feel it's just kind of like you see what games they're playing and you're like, I guess I'll join in this one, but it just seems like it doesn't work as well as Discord. Like Discord, right. I can just put in a background and pop in from time to time. On PlayStation, I need to like actively pop into chat and then I just have to, I'm in it. You know, it is just there taking up time or taking up like the audio space. So, they need to find better ways to integrate it, even if it's like integrating it with the phone so I can always keep up with my community and keep up with my party chat. That would be something I would look for that Discord currently does.
All right. Matt writes, can we make Michael's game or sandwich a regular feature? Pick one indie title a week.
I kind of want to do this. Like I think me and Dave joked about this a couple of times, except indie games keep raising up prices. They're starting to become like $20, $24. So I would have to like find some bad indie games that I know are going to be bad. But maybe I could do this. Maybe for November, I will pick an indie game a week and tell you if it's worth a sandwich or not. Because I kind of like this idea, especially me and Dave have been talking about how we want to handle reviews and we just want to do something a little bit more different than arbitrary scores. Not that I'm saying the official Digital Days Gaming is going to be sandwich or indie game, but just something different than just slapping an arbitrary number on a game. Dave, would you get on sandwich or indie game?
Yeah, I could. I mean, in terms of just, you know, like the time invested, I think there's enough things in there like... even with something like Game Pass or, you know, Origins Access or something like that, that I could, you know, have access to a bunch of games or seeing, like you've talked about before, like you'll check out if a game's on Game Pass before you buy it on Switch.
Yeah.
You know, so like it could be one of those things. But yeah, I mean, like Michael mentioned, like figuring out a way to balance or perceive our ability of what we think of a game or don't think of a game versus just saying it's a 4, it's a 2, it's a 1.5, like it's hard, and I don't feel like it's as relevant as it used to be.
Yeah, no, like the number system or letter grade, all that stuff just seems kind of arbitrary, especially where just like an audio podcast or website, whatever you want to say. So trying to find new ways to like talk about games. This could be a fun way to talk about some smaller games as we try and figure out how we want to handle big games.
Yeah.
But we definitely want to hear from the community in terms of like, how important
is a score to you?
Yeah. How important is a score to you? Would you rather just hear me and Dave talk about a game as we're playing it? Or do you need like a definitive answer on a game? And if you need that, do you need a number attached to that to know about, like, if you should
play it. Part of what sparked a little bit of this conversation too was me jokingly saying I was going to give you like a time limit on Assassin's Creed Valhalla before you could play Cyberpunk, and then Branham in Discord goes, well, you haven't, you know, like, how can you give Michael a thing if you didn't give Warlords a score? And that's where the perception of, like, well, he hasn't reviewed Warlords, like, Warlords of New York Divisions 2's expansion, like, I think for the most part during the month of March you guys got whether you should or shouldn't play Warlords in New York for me.
Based on
conversating and talking and what we were talking about, what I liked and what I didn't like. And if those things appeal to you, then you play it. If they don't appeal to you, then you don't play it. But if, you know, like we've always talked about, like, you know, you just ragged on the game. You just said 3 negatives and 1 positive, but you gave it an 8.5. So what do you really think? Like, I just told you what I think.
Yeah, like what we want to know from like listeners is like, what do you want to hear from like an audio review for a game? Like what things do you want us to hit when we're talking about a game or reviewing a game or giving our opinion on a game?
Because I'm not like you know, we've came from structure before. Like, I'm not a big person that likes to talk about graphics or how, like, I could like the game looks cool. Like every kind of game, Paper Mario Origami looks great. Uncharted 4 looks great. Does Uncharted look better than Paper Mario? Technically, on a technical aspect, yeah. Does it look better than Paper Mario? No.
Yeah. Well, and for me, like when it comes to like graphics and stuff like that, the only time I ever really bring it up is if it's bad.
Right.
Like if it's like if it messes up the.
Same with performance. We don't talk about performance unless it doesn't perform well.
Yeah. You know,
I think
like,
it's implied if I've been playing the game and I don't talk about a performance issue that I didn't have a performance issue. I don't really feel like I should have to say that the performance of the game ran at a locked 60 frames at 1080p with no screen tearing. I don't even really know what screen tearing is.
Oh, I do, but I don't bother. There's people that, especially for an audio review, video reviews, when they do like look at the screen tearing, they can point to it and it's like that's way better. But it's like, you know, me and Dave are probably going to buy MLB The Show when that comes out in like February or March. Do you really care or want to hear in depth of how beautiful that game looks when you already know what that game's going to look? You know, like there's only so much they can do for the baseball game and you know it's going to look good. You can already picture in your head what MLB The Show is going to be look like.
It's like, did anybody think Last of Us was going to have a bad story?
Or did anyone think Last of Us was going to look bad?
Right.
You know, like, do you really need a full breakdown in a review of, like, this game looks good and 1,000 reasons why this
Miles
game looks
Morales'
good?
Miles Morales' ability to swing through New York isn't as good as Peter Parker's.
Yeah, yeah. Like, like what do you guys need to hear? What do you guys prefer to hear when you listen to reviews? We definitely are trying to evolve that. We're 1 year in and we're still looking at our review system, but that we just want to keep growing and changing and adapting. So we'll get off that one.
Yeah. All right. So Stefan writes, what country would you love to visit when all this shit is over that you have never been to before? And is that decision being made because of any game? I mean, for me, it's half my wife and also half a little bit where I was, like, some of my heritage on my mom's side of the family's from. But it would be like Europe, Ireland, London. Like... And that's not that's not game based. It's just my wife has this tangible desire to go to London. I think London always looks really, really cool. And I have family in Europe, or in Ireland. I don't know which Ireland, but Ireland.
Yeah. For I want to go to Japan, but it's not really any video game thing, and it's not no fucking otaku thing. It's like I'm fascinated with how their city and their nature are. You know, like their city. The way cities are built in Japan and how they look, that neon stuff of Akihabara, that stuff always fascinates me. But then there's also like the beautiful nature side of Japan. And I want to visit Japan just to see both of those. And there's no video game reason for that. Yeah. I'm not like trying to recreate the Yakuza series when I go there. The only country that I would want to go to, and it would be video game based, would be like Italy. For like all the time I spent in the Assassin's Creed games, the Ezio games, I would love to go to Italy just to like walk around that, because they did such a good job of like making Italy even though Italy's obviously changed a long time from when, you know, they modeled Italy as. But
yeah,
that would be the only like video game place I would want to visit, or place I would want to visit because of a video game would be like Italy. So yeah, there are other countries. Like, I want to go to Canada, but that's boring because it's just like safe United States. You know, yeah, friendly United States.
I'm super intrigued by like the compactness of the cities, which is like of cities even in the U.S., which is like one of the reasons I love going to like San Francisco, because that city is like 7 miles by 7 miles. And then growing up in Metro Detroit, like Detroit city, like the amount of space that Detroit takes up is ridiculous in terms of how big the city is compared to like how small San Francisco is and how compact LA is in terms of their like the neighborhoods that they build. And then same thing with like New York, like going to Manhattan is like really cool. You walk up three blocks and you pass like some really cool stuff during those three blocks. You walk up three blocks in Detroit, you could pass nothing. You could pass terrible ghetto. You could pass multiple stadiums. You could pass multiple restaurants. The diversity is so different just because of how big the city is versus San Francisco, where I'm always just like looking at the buildings or the cable cars, and the just the compactness of the city is always so cool. They like
I could see that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So for you, it's like Ireland and some random cities, and then for me, it's Japan and Italy.
Like, I think that I would love to like go to like if you really like Dubai, like I think it would be cool. So.
Yeah, that would be cool.
All right, so those are the questions. Spotlight for me is like the Immortals video that's on YouTube. Please check it out if you have time. That's the biggest thing. Do you have a spotlight?
No, just keep voting. Keep voting.
Only a couple, like two more weeks.
Two more weeks if early voting. I know lines are long, but definitely do that if you can.
And then social media stuff, like we mentioned, the main account is at Digital Days Pod. Michael's is at the first MJC 1ST. Mine is at Good Dave Hunt. Facebook group and Discord that we just mentioned are in the show notes. So you can check those out. You can join those. If for some reason those links aren't working, please let me know. However, there are multiple ways for you to reach out to me. Even you can just email me dave@digitaldaysgaming.com. And then our Patreon, so patreon.com/digitaldaysgaming, where, you know, dollar tip jar helps support the publishing of the show every month. Discord access, $3 is the Discord access, where you get access to a private channel within our Discord, something else that Discord has as a feature. The $5 one is 24-hour early access to the two numbered shows, so you get the show on Wednesday morning instead of Thursday morning. And then $7 is you get the monthly bonus episode, which we just recorded for October. So that's a Halloween-themed episode where we talk about our Halloween stuff, memories, and things that we've done. So we've done, like, Halloween. We've done food. We've done E3 memories. We've done origin stories. We've done retail, a little bit of retail stories. I think I'm missing one in there somewhere. But there's a handful of stuff. We've got some stuff planned for November and December. And then just be sure to check out Facebook group, Twitter, Discord for our announcement on, I believe it's Sunday. So yeah, Sunday, November 1st, we'll have an announcement for our 1 year anniversary. Again, nothing that you have to like, I'm not going to tell you like what time it's going to be whenever I remember to post it.
It's not that serious.
Yeah. So it's just something cool. A few of you people have been asking for, a few of the listeners and viewers have been asking for, but nothing ridiculous. So please just relax. Please don't expect anything crazy. Like, we're not going to like launch a $100 tier of Patreon or anything like that. So,
yeah.
But other than that, like Michael said, please, if you can get out and vote, do whatever you can to vote, and keep moving forward. And Michael always tells everybody,
don't be a dick.